This talk was given by Patrick Yunnan Kelly at Zen Mountain Monastery. Yunnan is a senior lay student in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So this is from the Four Quartets. "Go," said the bird, for the leaves were full of children, hidden excitedly, containing laughter. "Go, go, go," said the bird. "Humankind cannot bear very much reality." So my name is Yunnan. I tend to practice more at the city in the Brooklyn Temple. But it's a pleasure to be back up here again. I was mentioning to Shalon, I said, when I agreed to do this talk, I thought, well, it's on the 28th, it's on the second day of session. There won't be that many people. It's usually only 40 or 45 or so. This is nice, but a little bit overwhelming. So I wanted to talk today about the courage to face reality, whatever that means. So the word courage, it comes from Latin, cor, cortis, through French to English. And so the original root of the word is heart, to have heart. Maybe you could think of it as to be wholehearted, to have courage. And then the other thing I wanted to do is try and frame it in terms of, some of you are familiar, there was a list of values, a statement of values from the Beyond Fear of Differences work that we've been doing. And the last talk I gave at the temple, I spoke about reverence and humility, and courage happens to be one of those items as well. So I wanted to speak of courage as well. And so from that statement, let me just read it. It says, courage, the ability to step forward, be vulnerable, tolerate discomfort, and hold space for new ideas. And as I was thinking back on my own experience with Zen practice, you know, it occurs to me, I notice how much of it has been a practice of courage. I didn't always, you know, I most of the time I thought of it as, oh, well, it's doing Seishin or Zazen or something else. But more I feel it, it really is a practice of courage, of being wholehearted. And of course, another thing is, some of you know, the name of this temple is Doshinji, which means the temple of the way of reality. So how to practice courage in the face of reality. So Shugen Roshi, in his opening remarks, spoke about a cocoon that we sort of weave for ourselves and then attach to in order to protect ourselves. And then he also pointed out that inherently there is no cocoon. But we're really good at weaving this cocoon and then mistaking it for the whole world. You know, it gets kind of cramped in there and a little bit smelly. But we don't seem to mind, or until we do mind. And when I'm inside this cocoon, you know, everything outside, reality, is on the outside. And everything on the outside seems, can seem on some, maybe on some subtle level that we're not often aware of, but it can be upsetting, frightening, terrifying. And in a sense, this is just what we do as mammals. You know, we have these fragile mammalian bodies. You know, without, if it gets a little too hot or a little bit too cold, we won't last for long. We don't have enough food or water, you know. We don't do so well. We even, it seems we need a certain amount of, you know, affection from other people, recognition from other people. We have these needs. And to be dependent on a world that we don't entirely understand and can't predict and is to some extent unknown to us is an uncomfortable situation to be in. I think of other animals, you know. We don't have claws or gills or thick fur. We've lost our tails. But one thing we do have is this dualistic consciousness, which we can use. It's a remarkable piece of equipment. We can use it to protect ourselves. And so we divide the world into what's me and what's outside, and then we try to armor, put up some armor to protect ourselves from what's outside. And maybe we even sort of double down on our fear. And to, you know, I noticed in my own experience, you can get so good at it that you don't even know that you're afraid anymore. And it's like, or, you know, you identify your refusal to feel fear as your courage. And so this becomes very tough and kind of hardened, maybe a little bit unforgiving. You know, we say to ourselves, you know, the world is tough, you know, life is a struggle. Just have to buck up and deal with it. And there may be some truth to this. I mean, life is, the Buddha taught, after all, life is suffering. But I think not in the way that we might think of that at first. To really encounter what that means is a very profound teaching. And so at some point, if we're, even though we may be afraid, at some point we have a view of here I am and here you are. At some point, we come to sense the limitation of our view, whatever that is. The limitation of all of our views, of any conceivable view. I was thinking, there's a passage in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra where Dogen is talking about looking at the mountains and seeing the mountains. You know, what are these mountains? He says, you can see the mountains as grass and trees, earth and stone. You can see it as the splendor of the seven treasures, or as the realm of the practice of the Buddhas, or as the actualization of the inconceivable virtue of the Buddhas. And, you know, these seem to be getting progressively better and better. But he goes through these, and then he kind of, you know, puts them all aside and says, these are all narrow, one-sided views. Even seeing all phenomena as the realm of the actualization of the realm of practice. He says it's a one-sided view. I think, I remember when we studied this years ago, the actual translation is it's something like, it's like looking through a narrow bamboo pipe at the world. So we get in these views. And just to you know, I want to make this a little bit more concrete. Down at the temple for the last couple of years, some of us have been as part of this Beyond Fear Differences group, we've been doing this What is Whiteness group, where we examine, we try to examine those of us who identify as white. What does that actually mean? And I think this sort of work can be uncomfortable. I mean, I think as far as I can tell, well, it is for me, and I think it probably is for most people sometimes. And people sometimes ask, why is it necessary? Why do we need to get political like this? And I mean, personally, I don't think it's fundamentally about politics. I think, although that does come into it, it's like when you take something up and you pull on that string, it's connected to everything else. But, you know, fundamentally, I think it's about, I would say, it's about what does this, what does, whatever my, you know, as my particular social or whatever identity, what does, an aspiration for the liberation of all beings, what does that mean given this particular form that I'm in? You know, and then it's also just about, on a very concrete level, trying to tend to relationships with other people in the Sangha. And as I said, it can get uncomfortable, but I was, you know, sitting zazen for 12 hours a day can get a little bit uncomfortable too. So, and, you know, coming to grips with the limitation of our view, so it requires courage. Trungpa Rinpoche once said that courage is, he defined courage as refusing to give up on oneself and refusing to give up on other people. And so as I said, courage is something that I think I've been, since I started practice, it's something that I've really been working with. Sometimes I think it's to actually be in a situation where you're afraid and then to find courage. I mean, I was thinking about it. There's a part of it where it's a little bit of it is just curiosity. It's that feeling when you know, you're like, say, at the edge of a high balcony and you think, I could just jump. Not as a sort of, you know, despair or sort of self-punishing way, but just out of curiosity. You know, what would it feel like falling through the air like that? I mean, I wonder. Then another thing I think is like it's more like sometimes when I'm able to summon that courage, it's more of a question of the fear of having regret at not taking an action, at not taking an opportunity to step outside of myself is more painful than the fear of the consequences. And so it really just sometimes just comes down to that. The Buddha, the sort of classical story of coming up against one's the limitations of one's view of the world, your experience of the world, and the story of the Buddha was the four divine messengers, of course. So as you know, he lived a very sheltered life growing up. He had everything that he could possibly want. And then one day he saw an old person, and he had never seen that before, the story goes. And he got to thinking, you know, why this happened to me one day. And then soon after that, he saw a sick person. And then he realized that too will happen to me. And then he saw a corpse. And he realized that too will happen to me. And then he saw a mendicant. And he realized that he had the possibility to seek for a different way. He said, why, being myself subject to birth, do I seek what is also subject to birth? Why, being subject to sickness, death, sorrow, and defilement, do I also seek what is subject to aging, death, sorrow, and defilement? Suppose that I seek the unaging, unailing, deathless, sorrowless, and undefiled supreme security from bondage, nirvana. For me, I find that it requires a lot of courage to respond to these four messengers. If I look closely, they're always appearing in my life, constantly. But I can choose to see them or not, and sometimes I do. Fortunately, our practice helps with that. I was thinking about, I was remembering as I was working on this years ago when I was the cook here, and I was going through a really hard time. I was just sort of at the end of my tether. And part of my job was to go do the shopping on Monday during Hosan, or Tuesday, I forget. And I would often have a few minutes to grab a sandwich there because I would miss lunch. And it was early spring, and so I'd like to go into the churchyard of the church in Kingston, and just sit on a bench and enjoy the weather. And I was doing that one day, and this guy sitting on the bench next to me asked me for a light. I said, no, I don't have a light. But we started talking, and it turned out he was he didn't look well. Because it turned out he was a cook when he was in the Navy, so we were talking about being cooks. And he told me that he had just had a stroke, and he was just gotten out of the hospital. And they told him, you really shouldn't leave the hospital, but he just wanted to go out and smoke cigarettes and be in the sun. But it didn't look like he had a lot of time left. And I was talking to him, and it turned out, he didn't really have anywhere to go, anywhere to live, seemed like, as far as I could tell. He said, he was telling me the story of his family. He said his family was some of the native people that lived in this area, and they had some land at one point, but then they lost it, and so he didn't have that anymore. He had been married, but that ended years ago. His siblings had died. He had a son, but he was off in Florida. He wasn't coming back. And after a while, I had to go, but this encounter really got to me. It still does. And I went back, and I was not too long after that, I saw Ryushin Sensei in face-to-face teaching. And I without really realizing, on some level, I was pleading with him to tell me that, that's not going to happen to me or anyone I care about. And he wouldn't do it. It felt like it was just too real. It was a reality that I felt that I couldn't carry. This is again from the Buddha. Monks, this samsara is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not discerned of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. What do you think, monks, which is more? The stream of tears that you have shed as you roam and wandered on through this long course, weeping and wailing because of being united with the disagreeable and separated from the agreeable? Which is greater, this or the water in the four great oceans? For a long time, monks, you have experienced the death of a mother, the death of a father, the death of a brother, the death of a sister, the death of a son, the death of a daughter, the loss of relatives, the loss of wealth, loss through illness. As you have experienced this, the stream of tears that you have shed is more than the water in the four great oceans. When I went to the I was thinking when I went to the Guardian Council to become a student, I was talking to Sean about it a week or so ago, and it jogged my memory. I remember that it took me three times to get through. And it was, you know, I'd been practicing for a number of years at this point, and so it was a difficult experience. And the first time I came up here, and I got here kind of late on Sunday morning from the city on the bus, and I said, well, I want to do Guardian Council. And Hojin was like, well, I don't know. Let me... And I thought, well, maybe this is just one of those, you know, ritual Zen test things, and I just have to keep pushing. And then Hogan came up and said, we're not going to see you. And I was like, is this part of the test too? And then I thought, well, this guy seems pretty serious. I don't want to mess with him. So I let that go, and I signed up for the next month. And then I came again. And it was, I felt very clearly that this was something that I wanted more than almost anything that I had wanted before. But I couldn't articulate why. I couldn't really say that. And I went in there and I felt like I was, you know, just frozen, like stuck. I couldn't get the right words out. And I was, you know, I was crying and but they said, well, why don't you sit with this some more and you know, come back and when you're ready and try again. And I was crushed, you know. But I, you know, thankfully I found something and I kept working with it. And the third time I went it was about 3 weeks after the 9/11 happened. And yeah, I remember from that day going outside of work and I could see the buildings on fire. And I was like, oh my God, you know what? I started circumambulating the block, chanting the Yame Juku Kenongyo. I didn't know what else to do. And then I kind of wandered home in a daze and no one was there because my partner at the time, she was working down by the buildings. And I had a pretty good sense she wasn't there that day, but I didn't know for sure. And no phone service. And, you know, are we going to launch a nuclear missile in return? Who knew? I mean, it was just nuts. And I remember sitting in my room by myself feeling, this is just way too real. You know, I just want out of this reality. It's too much. And so I grabbed my Zafu and I went out on the sidewalk where people were milling around and I just started sitting Zazen. Just because I wanted to be around other people and I guess I just trusted the Zazen posture. So I did that for a while and it actually helped until you know, someone drove by and rolled down the window and they yelled out, hey buddy, you're waiting for the end of the world, you're sitting in the right place. So I got up at that point. But then when I came up here to the Guardian Council after about two or three weeks, things were settling down again. Things were kind of, you know, returning to normal, I guess. And I went in there and I was asked, you know, the same question again, why do you want to do this? And it popped out of my mouth without me really knowing where it came from. I said, you know, whatever that reality was, I want to know what is that about? That thing that I thought that I couldn't bear. And I was like, oh my God, did I just say that? But I did say it. And then Ryushin, I remember, he said to me, you know, why the hell would you want to do that? Most people would want to run away. Why do you want to go into that? You know, it feels sometimes humankind cannot bear very much reality. At the beginning of the Lotus Sutra, when the Buddha propounds the Prajnaparamita, the teachings on emptiness for the first time, it said that 5,000 monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen got up and left because it was just too much. But not everyone left. You know, I think it is possible to bear what we think that we can't bear. And not just endure it, but actually bear it joyfully with love for reality, this reality. You know, if I don't know, it's people go through so much during session. I hope you're somewhat enjoying it. But it, you know, if it, just by virtue of being here, you have whatever courage you need. It's the fact that you're here is proof that's in place. Or you know, if someone's listening, even just listening to a podcast or the teachings. I mean, all we have to do is just take the next step that's in front of us. Whether we're upset or relaxed or angry or afraid. And just wholeheartedly practice that. And practice it for your benefit and for the benefit of all beings. So I just want to, let me end with another poem. This is called Not Ideas About the Thing, But the Thing Itself. At the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. He knew that he heard it, a bird's cry at daylight or before in the early March wind. The sun was rising at 6, no longer a battered panache above snow. It would have been outside. It was not from the vast ventriloquism of sleep's faded papier-mâché. The sun was coming from outside. That scrawny cry, it was a chorister whose C preceded the choir. It was part of the colossal sun, surrounded by its choral rings. Still far away. It was like a new knowledge of reality. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.